You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Sean McMeekin. His new book is Stalin's War, an assembly of facts and quotes and observations and narrative that add up to a surprising version of what happened between 1939 and 1948 and the beginning of the Cold War. We go to the event that is celebrated as the beginning of the collapse of Germany. However, it started as a massacre along the Russian frontier with Germany. Stalin, having gobbled up all the buffer states, I learned from the professor, has now a border with Germany of thousands of miles. He's made himself vulnerable. In his greed for territory without fighting, he's created the conditions that on June 22nd, 1941, lead to Operation Barbarossa, the Germans jumping the border and rolling, I think, Army Group Center or something significant, rolled 40 miles in the first day. The story told at the time was that Stalin was shocked, even to the point of having a nervous breakdown. No one heard from him until he addressed the nation in July via radio, which at that point was available for very few people. But in any event, that's the story. The facts mitigate that story. Professor, where was Stalin June 22nd, June 21st, June 22nd, and all the way to his July address?
Oh, well, he was mostly in the Kremlin meeting with all of his ordinary advisors. I mean, as it was happening in real time, there's no sign of any kind of serious break where Stalin has any type of a breakdown or panic. There is a dramatic scene about a week into the war, once all the horrendous reports are pouring in from the frontier, and there are different versions of what he says. You know, there's a catastrophe. We flushed Lenin's legacy down the toilet. It's all done. And there's a bit of a tantrum, and he goes to his dacha. But this is only for a short period. I mean, of course, he had to rest and sleep from time to time. But and the idea, for example, that that he disregarded all warnings about the war. He didn't believe every intelligence report he got, in part because he just got so many of them. But he couldn't hide a military buildup of this scale. The Soviets weren't hiding their military buildup either. And that's the part most people don't know about, is just how much the Soviets were shifting to the frontier. It's just that in the end, the Soviets were effectively caught a little bit in this mid-mobilization limbo. There have been all these last-minute orders to try to camouflage all the new tank parks and air bases, and they weren't ready. It wasn't done. It was supposed to be completed at some point in July. I'm sure there was a moment, not of panic exactly, but of shock a little bit that the Germans had really beaten them to the punch and gotten them before they were ready. But right, the idea of this breakdown, the shock of this invasion, it's a story that in various guises has kind of continued on to the present day, in part because, of course, it's so convenient. It makes it seem like this was this utterly unprovoked, unexpected invasion, whereas, in fact, both sides had really been mobilizing and preparing for war for months. It's just that the Germans were both a little bit faster, quicker, more efficient at it, and in the end, the Germans struck first, which, on the one hand, did, of course, tremendous damage to the Soviets because they were so exposed. They had so much equipment so close to the frontier. So much of their air force was so close to the frontier. But in the long run, just as you said, strategically, diplomatically, in effect, this kind of sealed Germany's defeat, because by committing such an obvious and flagrant act of armed aggression, this created this kind of almost public relations miracle, as I call it, where Stalin was no longer the monster and the butcher and the devourer of small nations, but now he was a victim and his people were heroes. And so the British and the United States are going to unleash this flood of largesse, lend lease in other varieties that in the end is going to help turn the tide of the war on the Eastern Front.
It's October 8th, 1941. Zhukov, commanding first the Leningrad, the Stalingrad, the Petersburg Front, which called Leningrad, and now commanding the Moscow Front, telephones Stalin, the quote, "Nearly all routes to Moscow are now open. The city is evacuating women and children. The NKVD has lost control. Factories are rioting. There's looting going on in the city. The Germans are within sights of the towers of Moscow. Stalin chooses not to leave, emphasizing that their victims are going to fight to the end." The puzzle here is this one quote you have, Sean. "If 500 German parachutists had jumped in to Moscow and taken control of the radio, the Soviet Union is done." It's astonishing. What was, at this point, the Western opinion of the war that day, October 8th? What did London think? What did Washington think? The two outstanding capitals that hadn't been conquered.
Well, it's interesting. I think Moscow certainly could have fallen. I'm not sure if the Soviet Union would have entirely collapsed. They had begun already evacuating some of their factories and much of the government to the east. But I do think Stalin's decision to stay was critical, both in helping to stiffen morale in the city. And in the end, there was a little bit of fortune and luck that the Germans didn't really know how vulnerable the city was, but how serious it was. The one thing that probably prevented the full story from getting out was that most of the journalists had already left Moscow. So I don't think those journalists also understood just how serious the situation was. On the other hand, they know they had been told to leave, along with the diplomats, the entire diplomatic corps. They were all sent to Kuibyshev, or Samara, as it was later called, so that for this next period in the war, in fact, Moscow, a little bit like Paris, has been evacuated in various wars. The capital is no longer Moscow, as far as the foreign correspondents and the diplomats and the embassies. There certainly was this sense that Russia was close to going under, which is part of what helped Roosevelt and his advisors like Hopkins really to justify their policy of all-out aid to the Soviet Union, which thus far had basically been hidden from the public. In fact, right up into November, the U.S. ambassador at the time, Lawrence Steinhardt, I think it's on the 6th of November, one day before the revolution anniversary parade that Stalin famously stages to show the defiance of the Soviet people, Steinhardt warns his Soviet counterparts and hosts that they must not leak to any Western reporters that the U.S. has been giving all this aid to the Soviet Union, because it was still secret. It was being hidden from the public that the Soviets had been deemed worthy and eligible for lend-lease aid. After November, and again, both the decision to stay and then also Stalin's famous speech at the Revolutionary Parade, and I mean, there are parts of it that harked back to Russia's glorious ancestors patriotically. There were also parts where he's talking about how if the Germans want to have a war of extermination, they'll have it. The very next day, in fact, pretty much the same day, depending on the time zone, Roosevelt finally announces openly to the public that he has deemed the Soviets worthy of lend-lease aid. And so the very fact that things were rather desperate, and they might not have known all the details, but I think this was perceived in London and Washington, helped to justify that policy. So they really do unleash the floodgates of aid, which they'd already been doing surreptitiously. Now they're going to do it quite openly.
Yes, we need to talk about the aid, lend-lease, first, second, and third protocol. But a date here, it comes to late 1941. October, November, and there's a stand made at Moscow, and the Germans, Sean pictures them as two punched out fighters swinging wildly at each other where they can barely see. That's how exhausted they are in December. But there's something else that's about to happen, was that the U.S. is about to be attacked by Japan, and we want to include that here before we explore Lend-Lease and the generosity and the complications. Sean, I'll ask bluntly. Stalin has really good information about Tokyo from Richard Soga, his spy. He believed some of it, he believed all of it, or none of it. Who knows? He had so many different spies. Did Stalin at some point know that Japan was going to attack, and did he choose not to convey that to Washington despite Lend-Lease?
Well, I think he certainly knew that Japan was going to attack or was close to attacking. He may not have known all the precise operational details and the specifics about Pearl Harbor as such. But Sorge, his reports from Tokyo, you alluded to, along with signals intelligence, the Soviets knew that the Japanese had been transferring armor, troops, warplanes, et cetera, from Manchuria and the Soviet frontier down to the south, preparatory also to their moves in Southeast Asia. It wasn't just Pearl Harbor, of course, it was attacked in December. Was all these other U.S. and British and Dutch positions in the southeastern Pacific. So Stalin absolutely had excellent intelligence in all this. And in fact, it's quite interesting. There are a couple of meetings involving both Hopkins and also Avril Harriman in Moscow earlier in 1941, one in July and one in September, where the subject comes up of Japan. And in Hopkins' case, he just, although Stalin wants to make sure that the Americans will keep the Japanese busy in Asia, it doesn't occur to Hopkins to ask what Stalin will do if Japan attacks the United States. Harriman at least raised the subject in September, and Stalin actually gave him this kind of grin and said that he thought the Soviets might stay neutral because, of course, they had a neutrality pact with Japan. And it was entirely to Stalin's liking and design, of course, that Japan attacked the United States and Britain instead of the Soviet Union. That was the entire point of the neutrality pact. And he definitely did whatever intelligence he had and believed, and he did have pretty good intelligence on Japan, some from high up sources very close to Japan's government. He did not share that.
All right, let's go to Lend-Lease then. The book is Stalin's War. Sean McMeekin is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.